So what I'll be trying to do in the short time allowed is to argue that through some X-ray spectroscopy data, we now have a good, at least some hints on what the accretion geometry is in radio galaxies. Of this isn't one, this is M87, but it's a nice picture. And then I'm going to argue that we can then collect a lot of the phenomenological data we have out there and hopefully put together a coherent picture of what causes radio jets, powerful radio jets, and some accreting black hole objects. So the tools that I use to determine the geometry in the inner parts of accretion disks are X-ray reflection. I'll just briefly go over this because John Miller, I'm sure, will do a better job of this tomorrow. But basically, in a hard X-ray spectrum in many accreting black holes, these X-rays can be reprocessed in the optically thick accretion disk around the black hole, giving rise to reflection features, most notably the iron K alpha line. And if this line is produced close to the black hole, then relativistic effects will sculpt the line into a characteristic shape, which we can resolve with most modern X-ray detectors. And by modeling the shape of this line, you can determine the innermost stable, radius at which the line is being produced, which can give you a handle on different, say, space-time geometries around the black hole. So we want to use these reflection features to explore any differences between radio loud and radio quiet AGN. So early results with ASCA and Baplusax in the 1990s basically showed that the reflection features in broadline radio galaxies tended to be weaker than the Seyfert ones. You tended to have weaker reflection continua, weaker iron K alpha lines, and possibly even narrower iron K alpha lines. There's many different degenerate interpretations of these observational results. Was the accretion flow truncated, large radius, giving rise to an optically thin flow at the inner part of the disk? Is the X-rays being diluted by any jet emission, which would diminish the amplitude of the reflection features? Or were the disks just highly ionized by the powerful X-ray continuum, which would also diminish the X-ray reflection features? But a number of these interpretations, you couldn't determine between them with this data because the lack of bright sources, radio loud objects are rare, so they tend to be farther away, therefore fainter. And then also you tended to get low quality spectra because of that. So I'll just show some new results that I obtained along with Andy Fabian on this broadline radio galaxy 4C7426. It's most notable for the fact it has very large radio lobes on the sky, extending 10 arc minutes from tip to tip. But it's on the border between a quasar and Seyfert class with a bolometric luminosity around 10 to the 46. We have an inclination limit given from the lack of a counterjet. Wu and Uri, from the width of the broad lines, estimated a black hole mass of 4 billion solar masses. With using this bolometric luminosity, you get an Eddington ratio of about 4%, which means it's not a low luminosity AGN, so you're not really expecting it to have a truncated accretion flow down in the center. And so the 35 kilosecond XMM observation gave this as the iron K alpha profile. Now, this is not MCG6, it doesn't really leap out at you, but if you squint your eyes, and you can see that there does seem to be a broad profile here. And indeed, when you actually do the X-ray spectral fitting, you find that the best statistical result is actually a relativistic line from a moderately ionized reflector, which actually extends within the innermost stable circular orbit for a Schwarzschild black hole. That is, we do need to seem to have a spinning black hole in this source to actually produce the width of the line. You can get models with larger disk radii to fit the line. That is, you don't need emission within the ISCO, Schwarzschild ISCO. But that gives you a smaller inclination angle, and that gives problems with the actual physical size of the radio jets, because if you make the inclination too small, then the physical size of the radio jets becomes like 3 megaparsecs, which would be like the biggest radio galaxy known. So for that reason, we sort of didn't like that solution. Partial covering solutions do give us a kind of a good fit, but also a poor statistical result. So obviously this does need to be confirmed with a longer observation, but being a sort of a quasi-theorist, I'm just going to believe that result and just let's think about the implications of that. And so what are the implications for jet formation? And the way I'm sort of going to frame this discussion is we have two sort of Seyfert 1 type galaxies here, one 4C7426, one NCG6, with both having broad lines, both, if you believe the spectral fitting, requiring a spinning black hole in order to fit the breadth of the line. So why does 4C7426 produce massive radio jets and NCG6 does not? So let's go through some parameters here and compare the two. So first is black hole spin. Now this has been thought to be the key parameter for about a decade now. Maybe the radio loud objects have really rapidly spinning black holes and the radio quiet ones do not. Both of these objects, NCG6 and 4C7426, seem to require a spinning black hole in order to seem to require a spinning black hole. So unless it's a very sensitive spin dependence, which I can't rule out, I would argue that that's either no spin or spin is probably not the key parameter here. Also, we know that radio emission in creating stellar mass black holes is quenched when we move from the low hard state to the high soft state. So this is not a spin effect. The spin is not changing as we go from one state to the other. Finally, models of black hole growth all seem to show that when you're building up black holes, note that this is a log on the log scale on the y-axis, but building up black holes through both the combinations of mergers and gas accretions tend to push things up to very high spin parameters. So my assertion is that all massive black holes are probably rapidly spinning. Second, is the accretion rate the dominant parameter? Again, both 4C7426 and MCG6 are accreting above the sort of break which you expect a truncated accretion disk. And 4C7426 would be about 4%. MCG6 is about 30%. But we know from radio emission from galactic black holes that, as I said, that it's quenched as you go up in accretion rate. And Macaron in 2003 suggested that once you get above 2% of Eddington, that's where the jet line occurs and the jet emission is quenched. So maybe when you go up to high accretion rate, that's an unfavorable circumstance for producing radio jets. Other evidence for this is from the low luminosity AGNs, which are often seen to be comparatively radio loud, and these are very weakly accreting objects. Yeah, clearly there are other broadline radio galaxies like 3C120 and radio loud quasars that are, of course, accreting above this and are producing radio jets. Oh my gosh, he's picking up the red sign, so I better hurry up. So I got 1 minute left. All right, so evidence for this is this plot from Marchini, Cialotti, and Ferrezzi, where they took a sample of radio loud objects and estimated their bolometric luminosities and the black hole masses, and they found this double peak distribution here where most radio loud producing sources either have very low accretion rates or accretion rates around 10% in Eddington. Jester this year wondered about selection effects in the sample, which I can't really comment on, but I'm just, again, being a theorist, going to take this as face value. So moving on now more quickly to black hole masses. Perhaps the most interesting thing I'm going to say is 4C7426 has a black hole mass of 1,000 times larger than MCG6. I'm trying to move into Neil Brandt territory now and keep talking and not breathing. If you do surveys of black hole masses, you tend to see that above those 10 to the 8 solar masses, you have a higher probability of getting a radio loud source than a radio quiet source. So perhaps black hole mass seems to be the case for AGNs, while for galactic black hole sources, clearly the black hole mass isn't changing for you go from low hard state to high soft state. So what's actually changing when you increase the black hole mass? Well, if you look at Shapiro's side of disk, increasing the mass of black hole increases the disk scale height to H, and therefore H over R. Now, the key point here if you remember one thing, remember this. Low state black holes and low luminosity AGNs, the other radio loud producing sources, probably have radiative inefficient accretion flows and therefore high H over R. If you have a massive black hole and an AGN, say it's over 10 to the 8 solar masses, you also have a larger H over R ratio. So the two things that seem to be connecting is a large H over R, which may enhance the pleomagnetic field as suggested by Meyer. So Meyer's final assertion is necessary but not sufficient perhaps conditions for powerful jet formation is a spinning black hole, which is the ultimate energy source, by a large H over R in the inner accretion flow, which can then enhance the pleomagnetic fields and give rise to jet formation. And I'm stopping right now. Thank you.
Okay, questions, comments?
Hi, if we use the large H over R in the inner accretion flow, does that then cause problems with those first iron lines, you know, the iron line simulations that for Schwarzschild versus Kerr is based on the thin disk geometry?
Well,
so what,
yeah.
How is that going to affect the profile?
As long as the inner accretion flow is optically thick to reflection, then it's it shouldn't affect the iron line profile. So you can get, of course, I haven't worked this out, but I'm guessing that you can get a fairly large H over R, but still have enough column to get reflection appropriate.
But they're not going to be traveling on nice, simple geodesic circular orbits.
Perhaps not, but at this point, our integration times to get the iron line profiles are much longer than the orbital time anyways, so it might average out.
To continue on that, I think the issue that he's making is the shape of the profile might change.
Mm-hmm.
First, because the orbits are not what's assumed in the thin disk case, and then the vertical extent, depending on how extended it is, the disk is in the vertical direction, then the light bending trajectories might change.
Yep.
But I suspect that your answer still applies, that for short integration, for low signal to noise, we probably cannot tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it even more important to get a longer observation.
Yep.
To test for this.
Yeah, there may also not be any iron left to provide the line at those temperatures with a large H over R.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew?
Just want to make a comment about the distribution of spin of supermassive black holes.
Mm-hmm.
First, the obvious comment is that we've no idea what it is.
Yes.
And secondly, I think theorists tend to, this is not a criticism, but tend to think of an accretion disk there, which is has the same plane, and it's going on accreting over a long, long time, maybe even the Hubble time. And it obviously, if that's the case, then you do put all the angular momentum into the hole, and it spins up. But the observations say that's not the case. And as I said yesterday, you have this random relation between the jet axes in disk galaxies and the rotation axis of the disk. And what that's telling me is that you have individual events that last maybe 10 to the 7, 10 to the 8 years, which torque the black hole probably through mergers, minor mergers, or companion galaxies, and then it switches off, and then you have another one comes in and torques it another way. And so you have this sort of torquing around on the time scale of the Hubble time, and it's not clear that you build up a high spin for the black hole under those circumstances.
Yeah, the people who have done the growth of the black hole modeling do take into account mergers. And you're right that mergers, when they come in, they can come in at any angle and actually torque the black hole both down and up. So they tend to scatter the spin in a sort of a Gaussian distribution. However, they've also defined, you know, this is all semi-analytical modeling, so, you know, you can over-interpret this, I suppose, that, you know, there's also gas accretion onto the black hole when during these mergers as well, and that tends to spin things up. So,
how much?
Well, yeah, that would depend on so that would be different. Yeah, so the history is going to be different for every black hole. Yeah, how they're built up.
Any more? Okay, one more.
Just if you could clarify, why would larger HFR give more poloidal flux?
I think that it was just from Meyer's results here. He suggested that for ADAFs, for example, that once you have just the thicker disk can support a stronger poloidal flux. So I'm not sure on the exact details of why that is, and I'm sure it would be very messy in the MHD case, but it seems to there seems to be a connection there.